Welcome to the Flyover Ministry Podcast, a practical youth ministry podcast for small church leaders by small church leaders. We are grateful that you have joined us for our journey through ministry-related topics that we hope help equip and encourage you as you serve Jesus wherever you are.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. I'm Dan.
And I'm Jordan.
And this is Flyover Ministry. What you heard was maybe just a snippet of Josh trying to speak his way into this. But we are back for part four of this particular series arc, talking about our experience and the breakout sessions at the D6 Ministry Conference in Orlando, Florida. And we are back in the northern part of the country. Northern climes as it's warming up and starting to feel more like it did in Florida. We were out pocket gopher trapping, me and my girls, and there was a huge swarm of mosquitoes that was hovering over some of the sloughs by our house. So the girls were very excited about that. And by very excited, I mean beside themselves in anguish.
Yeah, nothing inspires wanting to grab your local flamethrower as much as that.
As we get into this, last week I did a lot of talking, and this week we're back to Jordan sharing about one of the last breakout sessions that was at the conference, period. Great session by Richard Ross, and if you are not familiar with Richard Ross, would encourage you to just really look up anything that he has written or produced or spoken at. All sorts of great resources for you to be able to look at online now, but just a really well-spoken, kind man that I've bumped into a couple times while there, but you know, in passing, so we haven't really gotten to know each other that well, but appreciating a lot of what he says. So I'm going to start talking and let Jordan talk about what Richard talked about at D6.
Sure. So the session's title was Leading Parents to Change Their Highest Priority. And in ministry, oftentimes we recognize the challenge of, you know, things that we see and things that we say and trying to equip and encourage parents with. And for example, even just, you know, we've mentioned on this podcast multiple times, doing our best to just make resources available so that parents can utilize them.
Right.
And oftentimes knowing that that's not necessarily the case. But one of the things that Richard was talking about in this session here, Dr. Ross, was recognizing there's something deeper going on than just not using resources. And he opened with a quote that was saying, "Until parents' priorities change, why would they implement our suggestions at home?" And you know, there's a recognition here of the maybe dissonance of what we say and what we do, the incongruence of that. You know, if we're in a church setting and we're talking to parents, and I know this from times when I've done meetings with parents and we've had conversations, and we're talking about life and everything, and I just asked, so what are some of your priorities, you know, for your family, for your kids? And faith was fairly regularly included in those lists. And I think part of it was they felt compelled to include that. But I think genuinely speaking too, they really did want their kids to have a good faith. Mm-hmm. But when we're thinking about ranking priorities and what they put their time, energy, effort, and finances towards, that wasn't the top of the list. You know, it was, we want to support our kid in their travel baseball habits or in their business professional thing, the sporting, athletics, gymnastics, whatever the case may be. We want to make our kid a class A gamer kind of thing. I haven't met too many parents who are like going down that route, but we see in function, and let me even another one here, a bigger priority that we can see is I want my kid to be successful. I want my kid to be happy. And a lot of those other things that we just mentioned flow from those categories of this, in all practicality, is our highest priority as parents. And it's easy to slip into. You don't want to have miserable kids. And I don't think that the gospel compels us to say your job is to produce miserable kids. That's not where we're going here. But that's just to say that it's the reality is the highest priority for families can sometimes drift from the gospel, even through good intentions. And so that this was kind of focusing on that aspect of how do we then serve in this way and meet families where they're at. And that led into, this was kind of one of his closing thoughts, one of them more at the end, but I think it connects pretty well here. A statement he said was, the centrality of Christ is less significant than the supremacy of Christ. And what he was going at with that is, we can try to build and encourage our families to have a lifestyle that's built around Jesus being in everything. Jesus being like the center, at least that's what centrality means. You guys get that? Being built around Christ. And in some ways that can slip into a law thing. Just like, this is one thing that we have to do. This is one part of the process that we have to step into. And if a parent is being told like, Jesus is the center of everything, that's a different, that leads to different life response from Jesus being seen as supreme, as the best option to pursue. So Dr. Ross's presentation was really kind of, if we're doing the bare bones of it, was assisting parents in seeing the glory of Jesus and the, majesty of Jesus, that this image of Jesus as king. And Rich has been just throwing his name like we're buds. Dr. Ross has been going through this for quite a few years now, a handful of years. I remember going back in 2019, my first time at D6, I was able to have a coaching session with Dr. Ross, a handful of us with Dr. Ross. Wow. And he went through this kind of just this reality of his own journey of being challenged to look at Jesus, not just as the savior, which he is, and Dr. Ross would totally confess that, but just asking the question, where did Jesus go after he ascended? You know, what happened next? Jesus went to the right hand of the Father, where he sits and where he reigns as the king of the universe. And how often do we see Jesus as king? You know, we don't live in a monarchy, And we haven't functioned as a monarchy for, you know, quite some time. So we're a little bit divested from that. But that image, though, of like, have we gotten too comfortable with Jesus? You know, he does invite us to come as Father, right? Father, and that's great. We have that intimacy. But the reality is he's also king. So do we come before him kind of like with the trepidation of Esther? You know, recognizing as we go into the king's presence, if he didn't extend his scepter, we could be killed. You know, the caveat of that is that Jesus is always extending his scepter to us. He loves us and he seeks that for us, right?
Right.
But there's still that question of, do we see God as king? And if we can get parents to see that, that can like totally revolutionize some things here too. And so he talked about like the reality for parents can be that, well, he quoted Christian Smith. So Christian Smith, researcher, and he's the one, I believe, who coined the terminology of moral therapeutic deism as kind of one of the biggest religions that we see in America right now, where faith is because about us. It's not about Jesus. God is kind of like the vending machine to make our lives better. That's his purpose and his place. In his research, Christian Smith recognized that atheist parents and Christian parents polled pretty much the same as the priorities for their lives of children's success, children's happiness, children living upright lives. Those were the functional three priorities. And he's like, look, if an atheist parent is going to have the same priorities as a Christian church parent, maybe that is an indication that our Christian parents' hearts are spiritually cold. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're missing something here.
So recognize, I mean, Christian Smith has done, like you said, big time researcher. He was the one who headed up the National Study of Youth and Religion. I think that was back in 2005. And if you like analytics, would recommend picking up the book Soul Searching by him. That goes into a lot of his findings. If you're not so much, but want kind of the more condensed, practical application side of this, I would say Almost Christian by Kenda Dean would be a good way to process this. But just the hard truth there on the findings, right? The parents of Christian parents and atheistic parents, or maybe not even atheistic, maybe just maybe we just call them unbelieving parents, having the same kind of priorities. How do we change the culture then if, you know, the parents who come to our church have those same kind of priorities as the rest of the parents in the culture that we are in?
Yeah, and that's kind of what he was talking about with a large part of the session is just recognizing that challenge that we have of the hearts of parents potentially growing cold. And, you know, he also pointed that this can be evident in just some of the statistics that we see about families. Some of the research showed that it's only about 12% of the families were in-church families. So not even just worldly families, but in-church families where teens have spiritual conversations with their mom. That number drops to about 5% when you're having conversations with the dad. So if this is what reality is like inside the homes of Christian families, we see just like this breakdown of discipleship, this breakdown of the passing on of the faith at home, if it's not even present, right? And he's saying that when the parent's heart grows cold, they don't, won't, or can't have the motivation to change. So as we're in ministry and we're seeking to work with students, and we're also recognizing that a big part of this is the parents, this really drives us to prayer. Like, because we can't change the parent's heart. We can't change, you know, everything. We can give all the resources, but that's not going to do anything. They're not going to see the desire for it if we're not, or if they're not in a place to recognize that. So that brings us to, like, what do we do? And you can't, like, the toolkit that we have is pretty small, right? You can promote it till you're blue in the face. That's not necessarily going to change it. You can make announcements, right? You can try to guilt parents into doing these things.
And that's everyone else is guilting them into it.
Right. But I mean, that's not going to address the coldness of their heart, right? And so one of the things he even said was just like, now doing this gently and in love, but like getting to a point where you say even tenderly, we're going to walk through these things. Here's what we see, like what's going on in your heart and your life. Could it possibly be that we've lost our first love? You know, just even throwing that out as a tender question of love, looking at the church in Revelation where we see that happening and saying like, could this possibly be us? Is this where we're at? And, being gracious, you know, in that moment and saying, if this is us, Jesus died for us too, but pointing then back to the gospel, back to Christ. And so we get to that question, what then does restore this kind of relationship, right? And he gave two main points. First one was gratitude for the gospel. And I know that in my own life, it has been easy for me to possibly slip into this mentality where I've been saved, so the gospel message is now for others. And it's just been the last handful of years where it's been more of an opportunity for me to be thinking through, like, how does the gospel really apply to me? Like, still now, right? And that matters. I've been reading through this book, Counsel from the Cross by Elise Fitzpatrick and Dennis Johnson. And that's really been kind of talking about the centrality of the gospel and just maybe counseling context, but even just a bigger picture of asking the question of how is our life different because of the reality of the gospel and seeing ourselves, seeing our own need for Jesus and not glossing over the cross pointing out the costliness of our sin, but to also remember in those moments where we feel disqualified that Jesus chose the cross for us out of his love for us. Mm-hmm. And so it really comes back to that personal application, to have our heart softened and warmed towards Christ ourself. And then the second one then was awe after the supremacy of Christ. So that's kind of, again, that king thing here. And just picturing Jesus on the throne, you know, and recognizing too, I think that picture is helpful. Like, let's say that you had an opportunity to, or just get a phone call, and, you know, politics aside and what your preference is, let's say it's President Biden. Are you going to feel kind of honored that he's talking to you? He's taking time. Like, yeah, stuff's going on in the world right now, but I'm going to call you, right? We have that invitation from the King of Kings, right? Desiring our companionship, desiring to talk with us. And he's the greatest, right? Like, there's nothing that can even touch him. So that helps kind of put some things in perspective. So
the challenge here, I think, I mean, when we talk about the conversations spiritually that our kids have with parents, I think you do see a drop off going between mom and dad. But I think I've seen research, and this is where I've mentioned this stat before, and I really need to find where it is, because it matters who says it. I always mm-hmm. like to try and back up stats like this with, like, okay, well, says who? Right. Show me the evidence. Show me where I can find it myself to look at. That being said, here it comes anyway. The majority of conversations regarding faith between kids and parents happens with their mom. Mm-hmm. Kids will go to dad to see how faith is lived out. So there's a little bit of a skew there where, you know what, dad might not have a lot of those conversations, but faith being demonstrated is still being communicated through the dynamics of verbal affirmation and then by action seen in both parents, which again kind of brings us back to the importance of the nuclear biological family as the example of church and faith and life and development. I guess I kind of struggle in this point, because what he's talking about with where you want your kids to be successful and happy, and you want them to have a good life. And I mean, when we've asked this question, and it's been years since we asked this, but like, when your kids graduate high school, like, what do you want from them? Mm-hmm. And the answer typically tends towards, we want them to be good, upstanding members in their community, whatever community they land in. If they stay here, we want them to be a part of the community. And that's right. But the goal of the church is not just to raise upstanding citizens. We're making disciples. So my complication comes in, you want your kids to be happy, and that's a good thing. You want your kids to be good at sports or whatever activity they're in. You want them to be a proficient public speaker. Those are good things. You want them to be really good at playing an instrument. That's not a bad thing either. So it's realigning parents. And I'm curious if you talked a little bit more about how you help parents allow the centrality of Christ to influence those good things instead of just outright sidelining those good things.
Yeah. I don't recall like that specifically being addressed, but you know, there and again too, we would see the centrality of Christ would speak into recognizing that Jesus can be a part of, you know, an athletic pursuit, a musical pursuit, an excellence of some sort. But I think what he would say is that that also shows the weakness of the centrality of Christ, because you can have the centrality of Christ and say like, Jesus is going to be a part of me giving my life to basketball. But with the supremacy of Christ, you see Jesus is bigger than basketball. And so I think that's kind of the picture that we have here. And as parents, part of it is just recognizing that it's a matter of stewardship. We can have this desire for our kids to be successful, but successful in whose eyes? Are we using the world's metrics, or are we using the gospel's metrics? Because success might look very different according to God's eyes, right? We want our kids to be healthy and happy. Well, has God ever called someone on a path that has caused them to give up their life prematurely. Was Jim Elliott's, Roger Udarian's, were their lives for nothing? Were they wasted because they died early? Well, the Aka Indians were reached because of that, right? Were their parents happy with that? I guess I don't know about the parents, but what if one of our kids was called into a similar path? Are we preparing them for that, right? Are we stewarding them to see that the greatest good that they have ahead of them is whatever life God calls them to, where he is the biggest prize, I suppose you could say, goal, but just rightfully placed where it's about him and for him. I don't know if that really answers your question, but I think that that does flavor our conversations that we have. And even as parents in ministry ourselves, modeling that then to the parents that we have as best we can. And if you're not a leader that has children or are not in a marriage, I suppose, yeah, hand in hand there. But there's other ways you can do that too, you know, through a living example. But I think that kind of becomes part of the crux of the issue too for us.
Yeah. It strikes me as a slight echo of the kind of distinction we make, like Jesus as Savior and Lord. And, you know, he's both, right? The point you made about Jesus is inviting us to have that kind of familiarity, that we approach the throne of grace with confidence that Hebrews talks about. Jesus tells the disciples, you know, you've called me friend, and you should, because that's exactly what we are. So there you have the intimacy, the casual, friendly approach to being able to come to Jesus and say, here's what I'm dealing with, and the invitation he gives to all of us in that regard. But also he is in all full authority, right? The same Jesus who shows up in Revelation with a sword and a horse is a commanding general of heaven's armies. And I mean, this is the Jesus that we worship and talk to. So there's a careful balance that you had talked about that I appreciate, of the trying to be a good steward, trying to strike that kind of a balance where, you know, because, and this echoes what we've talked about in previous episodes, because eternity is on the line, we want to do the best we can, and we don't want to feel like we've failed. But it's it's having Jesus as your Savior, recognizing the forgiveness of sins, but also seeing, like, he does impact how I play volleyball. He does influence how I address my students as a youth leader. As a pastor, as an under-shepherd, he does influence the way that I respond to conflict within the church. And all these different things. And it strikes me as a leader, too, to be, again, just demonstrating that kind of a lifestyle. And even examining myself, right? The number of times that we've not necessarily had the right priorities. Where, look, we're just not that big into sports as a family. But that doesn't mean that we don't have other areas that draw that kind of priorities away from where it ought to be.
Right. Yeah. That I think there's an aspect of leading with humility too here that's important. You know, we model that largely by also being just like able to own our own faults in that. And I think in that we can model God's grace too, and just say that, you know, this is something, I'm sorry you saw that for me. This is something the Lord is working in my heart. And I'm growing, you know, and it's a part of the process. So, but that's an important piece too. And then as a walkaway thing, as we're going to be wrapping up our time here too, Richard Ross is just one of his things is connecting the hearts of students and parents together. And just recognizing that we've got a lot of challenges to that. And so one of the resources that he had come up with was this 30-day challenge where you go back and forth a little bit. You know, you've got, it's kind of scripted so that, I mean, it makes it attainable for some families. So they don't have to worry about like I don't know what to say. So they take some of that guesswork out. And then with, so you can choose, or, okay, so it was a print publication. Cost, I don't remember how much it was, but they have an app for that now. And you can, it's called officially 30 Days Parents and Teens, which is important to get the parents and teens because there's a lot of 30 days out there and you don't want to end up doing like some CrossFit thing accidentally together. Yeah. And
couch to 5K situation.
Yeah, yeah. But you can, on your device, then you can have like an option of one phone being used for both things. If your kid has a phone, you can like share it with them and then they can have the prompts for their attacks on there. But so you start with one day at a time. The goal is about like 10 minutes and you have this exchange back and forth. And so the first one is just like, you may be wondering why I agreed to spend these 30 evenings with you. I don't think anyone could have forced me to do this. I know there have been times when I've allowed other obligations to come before spending time with you, but that's not where my heart is. I'm committing to 30 evenings because you're incredibly important to me, and this is why. And so you have a chance to share that. So that's the opening one from the parent. The teen then will be able to say, you know, this is how it makes me feel having this time with you. And then going into scheduling being kind of crazy, but I promise that I'm going to spend this time with you and we're going to make this a priority, and promise to do that. And the teen is, yeah, I'm going to promise to do this too. That's pretty much day one, that promise together. But then in the first couple of days, you've got like, how do you receive love? You know, you're kind of talking to them, like trying to get from their perspective as a student, how they're feeling about that. And then by the end, it gets into deep things, just like, what's been a way that I've hurt you? And, you know, so it grows in that depth. But I don't know how often have we as parents talked to our kids of like, how have I hurt you? And I promise that I'm not going to do a lecture. I just want to listen and hear you share. But you can see how that could be something that would be really encouraging for families. So take a look at that. You get like the app is free, I think the first 5 days. And if you want to go beyond 5 days, then it's like $3. And I think you can, once you purchase the app once, you can share it with other people in your families if you have like a device sharing thing on Android. I don't know how that works with Apple or not. But again, you could use one device and just hand it back and forth and use it for however many kids you have. So it's not like anything that's going to break the bank. And, you know, a follow-up question is, if you are really concerned about connecting with the heart of your child, is $3 too much for that? So just a thought, but
yeah, this has been great. I know the D6 is, it's a great conference. And if you're at all curious about it, look into it. Would highly recommend it for anybody that's in ministry at all. If you're children's ministry, worship, senior pastor, executive pastor, maybe you're a deacon, an elder, whoever, especially youth workers too. There's really a lot for a little bit of something for everyone at these kind of conferences, and especially D6, the second time that I've been there, and would really strongly promote that. If money, and I realize like, the kind of thing where you talk about the $3 deal, if this is somewhat unattainable, if you look at it and you go, I don't know if this is exactly something that's for us, I'm just going to give a free plug to the youth worker weekends that we have. And if you say, Wisconsin in January, that's terrible. Why? You're not, know that in saying that, you're not the only one. I get it. That's usually the feedback that we get every year. But we love, you know, as a youth ministries department, to be able to come out and talk with you guys, even as a church. Maybe there's a group of churches at your community in your city that want to get together and have like a day-long training to talk about stuff like this. We'd love to be a part of that kind of conversation to help partner with you in just being sharpened as a leader in this, and to be trained and equipped. And Jordan, that's kind of your specialty as the training coordinator for our youth ministries department. And speaking as a networking coordinator, being able to connect with churches to be able to see, where do you need help? What are you working on? How can we help one another and strengthen each other in that? So I want to extend the invitation for you in that as well. But just a quick question here for Josh, if you have anything to add. That's great.
For some reason,
thanks so much for that, Josh. That's excellent.
One other thing to throw out too is that coming up in a couple months, we'd be doing a new season of our small groups too. So if that's something you'd be interested in, get in touch with Dan. I think is the one who kind of organizes the groups or makes contacts with people, I should say. So feel free. That's not necessarily Dan or myself. So you could get other voices, new friends to meet, but it is that mutual encouraging and time together that can be really beneficial for us all.
ymnetworking@aflc.org if you'd like to be a part of a small group of other leaders trying to network with each other. Again, that's Y as in
Yankee.
Yak. What's that?
Yankee. I think
Yankee
that's the...
or yuck. M as in mother, networking at aflc.org. For some reason, my mind just panicked and like, what starts with Y? Yak was the word that I chose. Not it yo-yo, works. Not Yankee, not anything else. My mind, full transparency, I almost said Wyoming.
Josh is saying that was his first answer too, Wyoming.
We better end this before we really go off the rails.
Okay. With that, may you go in peace and serve the Lord.
Thanks for listening to Flyover Ministry. You can find, follow, and give feedback on our Instagram and Facebook pages at Flyover Ministry. You can also get in contact with us on our Gmail account, flyoverministrypodcast@gmail.com. You can find other episodes that we've recorded on iTunes and Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, and please feel free to share them with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.